During his campaign for president, Donald Trump vowed to cancel all federal funding to sanctuary cities. Sanctuary cities are towns or cities that have decided to limit or bar their participation in aiding federal immigration enforcement efforts. And since Trump's election, three cities in Vermont have taken steps to formally declare themselves sanctuary cities, with another, South Burlington, voting to discuss the issue further. But the exact definition of a sanctuary city is not necessarily clear-cut. The Migration Policy Institute is a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank based in Washington, D.C., focused on immigration policies at the local, national, and international levels. And Muzaffar Chisti is director of MPI's office in New York, and he joins me now on the line. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
So there is no legal definition for what a sanctuary city is. What are these cities in Vermont and around the country talking about when they make declarations to formally say, hey, we're a sanctuary city? What does that mean?
That's exactly true. There is no legal definition. There's actually no formal dictionary definition. It's a catch-all phrase to define a broad spectrum of policies by states and localities in the last 20 to 30 years to encompass, you know, a spectrum of actions which define various levels of non-cooperation by these jurisdictions with the federal government in the enforcement of our immigration laws.
And when you say non-cooperation, you mean that these cities are choosing not to, let's say, ask the immigration status of people living in their cities?
It could be anything from not asking the status of people that their officials encounter, or sharing that information with the federal government, or declining to respect various detainers, which are sort of requests by federal government to hold someone for a period of time, or not hold people longer in their detention facilities than the state or the local crime would allow you to do. So it's rather broad spectrum of actions.
Well, these declarations have been popping up around the country in big cities like New York and Los Angeles, and much smaller communities like Winooski and Montpelier, Vermont. Is your office seeing these designations as a direct response or a challenge to President-elect Trump? Because some sanctuary cities have already been in place. Others, though, have been declared since Trump was elected.
The phenomenon actually started in the 80s by a set of churches around the country, which were concerned about enforcement actions against Central American refugees who were fleeing civil war in that part of the world. And there was their attempt to give people some sense of security that they would not allow immigration service agents to come to those premises. Then cities like New York, Chicago, San Francisco, around the same time, had policies adopted which would require their officials not to ask about the immigration status of people they encounter. Now, this is generally a very small phenomenon. The sanctuary cities phenomenon, as we know it today, became much more live and vibrant beginning in 2008 to 2014 because of a special enforcement program called Secure Communities, under which everyone who was fingerprinted at a local jail, those fingerprinted would be matched against a federal immigration database, at which point the Immigration and Customs Enforcement would request the local jurisdiction to hold a person until they came to pick that person because of their deportability. Now, a lot of local jurisdictions, cities and states, were resistant to this because it included a large number of people who were not violent criminals, who had a traffic violation, had deep roots in the communities, had families here, had been here for a long time, and they thought this kind of cooperation kept a number of these people in jeopardy. And this number rose to pretty close to 300 by 2014. And at that time, the federal government replaced the Security Communities Program with a new program called the Priorities Enforcement Program, which was meant to make these communities be much more sort of cooperative and coming back into a cooperative arrangement. So it's a phenomenon that has grown much more in the last 4 to 5 years.
So not just dealing with the Donald Trump presidency. Let's take a look at this federal funding issue. Some sanctuary cities seem emboldened because local leaders don't believe that Trump can actually follow through very easily on his threat to deny federal funding to sanctuary cities. Is that the case? And if so, why would it be difficult for Washington to deny those funds?
I think it would be very hard for any administration to impose these kind of sanctions, mostly because of the concept of constitutional federalism in our country. We are a country where there is divided government. Federal government has its own responsibilities. States and localities have their own. And as the Supreme Court has said rather boldly in the Affordable Care Act, federal government cannot really hold the gun to a state and locality to say, if you don't do X, we will not give you funding. Under our constitutional system, we cannot force a state or a local government to do anything that the federal government is supposed to be doing. And to penalize them for that, I think, will meet constitutional resistance.
And a lot of the federal funds, too, that come to these municipalities don't deal directly with immigration, so they would have to prove in court, I suppose, in federal court, that they would have some linkage to that, wouldn't they?
Exactly. I think programs that have a direct linkage to the issue may have better chance of success than programs which have nothing to do with the dispute. Like, you cannot hold funding for schools or for training programs in a state or locality when the dispute between the federal government and the local government is about immigration enforcement.
Muzaffar Chishti is director of the Migration Policy Institute office in New York. Thank you so much for taking the time.